Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the victory horns are sounding for one Mackenzie Dern. And man, if you are a fighter in the women's strawweight division, after seeing that performance, you are looking at Mackenzie Dern in an entirely different way, because she put the wood to Angela Hill over 25 minutes, 49-43 on one of the judges' scorecards, 49-44 on the others. Dominant, battering decision win for Mackenzie Dern. She gets it done. It was kind of like a bizarro fight, because you thought you would think heading into this fight that if the striking was going to be the majority of the fight, it would be won by Angela Hill. And if things are going to take place against the fence, it'd probably be won by Mackenzie Dern. It was the opposite both ways, but Mackenzie Dern showed a lot of wrinkles to her game, some evolved striking. And yes, Jed Meshew, who is joining us right now, vicious ground and pound from Mackenzie Dern, something you and I have been discussing for a long time. Could she add that wrinkle to her game? And she did. What a performance. And we're here to talk all about it. Welcome to the UFC Vegas 73 post-fight show. I am Mike Eck. That is the aforementioned Jed Meshew. Can't wait to get his thoughts on this performance. And my best friend is here as well, Alexander Kaylee, who was just telling me that the new Fast and the Furious movie is awful and no one should see it.
I was going to say, Jed, would you say, apropos of, I don't know why this phrase comes to mind, that that was the most Fast and Furious performance of Mackenzie Dern's career?
I would say it was one could say it's too fast and too furious at points.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I agree. You might almost say at times it was like she was in like a Tokyo Drift, like as far as her mindset goes. It was pretty impressive.
It was very fast and furious for all five rounds. It was fast five rounds.
It was a fast five rounds. Yeah.
That was pretty good. I did not expect that. That was excellent. Excellent. Look,
we got plenty more where that came from, baby.
It's a lot. I'm sure you do. I'm sure the puns will be fast and furious throughout this post fight show. Jed, let's begin with you. And let's talk about this performance from Mackenzie Dern, because you and I on various programs I don't know how many BTLs we were talking about heading into Mackenzie Dern fights, heading out of Mackenzie Dern fights over the last couple of years. If she could just learn to hit people while on the ground in these dominant positions, she is going to be a problem. And at one point in the first round, she landed an elbow in our Slack chat. I'm like, oh my God, she landed an elbow on the ground. And I was like, maybe that's going to be the only one she landed. Boy, was I wrong, because she was just ruthless down there with those strikes. What a performance from Mackenzie Dern. Did she answer all of the questions you could have had about her? Because I'm sure you view her much differently now than you did heading into this fight.
She didn't answer all of them. Like, there are still real questions about what Mackenzie Dern can do and kind of what her ceiling is. But this is the thing we've been waiting for. Like, I'm not here to say that I'm a genius and I've been asking for this when no one else has. We've all been asking for this. All of the people know the same things we need to see here. We need to see you have better, more committed striking. We need to see you be able to actually take people down and not just kind of wish your way into these positions. And when you do get them down, you can't just try to cuddle everyone. You have got to hurt them when you can't, because that's what cost you against Yan Xiaonan. You got into dominant positions, but you spent the whole time fishing for chokes that you didn't get. And then Yan, every round starts in the feet, and that's how that fight went. This one, she didn't. I still have a ton of questions about her striking, because it was certainly effective tonight, and we can talk all about that. She is not winning any awards for technique, and that's going to be a problem against people with more firepower to fire back, right? Angela Hill can't hurt her on the feet, realistically. Yan Xiaonan, we just saw lay out Jessica Andrade, so that same sort of ethic isn't going to work for Mackenzie Dern. But she answered the biggest thing I've wanted from her this whole time, is just she was mean. You have to be mean to be an elite level fighter. There is maybe one fighter in the history of this sport who got away without being mean and was a top tier athlete. It was Damian Maia, and he notably never won a title, and it probably didn't help that he didn't want to hurt people. You gotta hurt people. And it paid dividends, because she got Angela Hill down in that first round, and she didn't really try for submissions. She just beat the hell out of her. She tried a couple of times, but mostly she spent it laying the wood, as you said, Mike. And that adds up. That makes it more likely for other things to happen. And in that third round, before the big knee lands that we'll talk all about in the round three, Angela Hill had started to tire, and she didn't tire because she was playing defense on the ground the whole time from chokes. She tired because she was getting her ass beat for big sections of the fight. So one of the biggest, you know, question marks, the biggest wish list for Mackenzie Dern, she showed tonight. And so that elevates her and makes me very excited to watch her keep fighting.
AK, biggest takeaway from this performance? And I do want to give credit to Angela Hill, because she fought out some really tough positions tonight. She took a beating and just kept on coming. There were portions of that fight where she could have just let the beating continue and just got out of there, and she wouldn't allow that to happen. So all the credit in the world to Angela Hill for going the full 25 and making it to the final horn. But this is the Mackenzie Dern show, AK. What were your thoughts about it?
Mike, I've done a poll. I don't know how to spell. It says how you grade Mackenzie Dern's UFC Vegas 73 main event win. Obviously, I meant how do you grade Mackenzie Dern's win on Saturday? I gave A plus, A, B, or C or lower. We've got A leading 41%, which I think most of us would agree on.
I'm so disappointed that there wasn't a Fast and the Furious pun in that poll.
How would you? I feel like there's an obvious thing.
Was it fast? Was it furious? Was it fast and furious?
How would you describe? Neither fast nor furious, which would have been.
Was that more of a Letty performance?
Yes.
What character did she best embody out there? I think it was Letty. There was a lot of Letty in Mackenzie Dern out there. Is all I'm saying.
I don't know. She didn't go. Did she go for the triangle? Did she go for the Letty Ortiz signature triangle choke?
She absolutely went for the triangle.
Oh, I'm going to miss that. There was a lot going on.
Round two or three, when Hill follows her down into what is functionally a guard pull, almost immediately Dern gets a triangle. She doesn't get it locked on, but she gets the legs crossed. And then Hill goes, oh, shit, and runs away. But yeah, absolutely had a triangle effort. It was great.
If only Hill had crazy horsed her like Charlize does in the new movie. Spoiler. Anyway, most people are saying A. I would probably lean A as well. If only because I think, you know, if we say A plus, then we're saying like, oh, well, there's no room for like, this is their best performance or career. There's no room for improvement. It's up there. And I wouldn't mind people saying it's an A plus. I said in our Slack, like, I'm almost more impressed by her, you know, winning this dominant decision than a lot of us had predicted. Submission first round, second round. If this goes past that, we could see, you know, Angela Hill, you know, eventually figuring Mackenzie Dern out, being unable to be taken down, and just dominating the last three rounds on the feet. And that's not what happened. No one could have predicted it would play out like this with Mackenzie Dern. I'll hesitate to say looking comfortable, but certainly looking enthusiastic to exchange on the feet and getting the better of it on multiple occasions. So I really want to say A+. Like, I really enjoyed the performance so much. If it's like, how fun was the performance? It's like A++++. If we're talking like, okay, like how much has she evolved? How to review her as a contender and things like that. Then I'm like, okay, fine. This was Justine. But Justine is very good. Her third time getting to main event a card. The other two did not go her way. Again, I don't know how much this improves her standing in people's minds as far as like, yes, now Mackenzie Dern is going to be like, she's put it all together. Because clearly she hasn't like put it all together. But man, that was so fun to watch. And it's so rare, guys, that we say, this fighter just has to do this. We want to see a fighter do this. And then they actually do it. It just doesn't happen. There's some fighters we've been slamming our heads against the wall like for like their entire careers. There's fighters were like, man, if only this fighter had done this, they might have become a top five fighter. They might have become a champion. And it just doesn't happen. And it's fine. Listen, they're the people in the cage. It's very easy for us to sit back here and say, hey, why don't you just do this? Why don't you just add this to your arsenal? Why don't you become better at this? Very easy for us to say it. So that's why it's so cool to see a fighter actually clearly hear this, not from us, but from her coaches, trainers, her peers, and implementing it in such an effective way as far as the ground and pound goes. And also, listen, keeping her not giving up on that striking, not accepting that, okay, I'm just a jiu-jitsu person. She wants to throw down. How is this going to work against, I don't know, higher ranked competition? I don't know. But Angela Hill is pretty damn good in the feet. So maybe she surprised Angela Hill. Maybe if they run this one back, Angela has a different game plan, is more prepared for the stand-up, but got to give a lot of credit to Mackenzie Dern, though.
Completely agree with you. And both women are going to take home an extra 50 Gs because this was the fight of the night, according to the UFC. And you know what? Yeah, no brainer. Congratulations to both women. And, you know, at least Angela Hill may not get the win bonus, but she can dry the tears with $100 bills and lots of them because she just won $50,000 for fight of the night. The other bonuses go to Diego Fajardo, which we're certainly going to talk about because that was an incredible knockout. And Slava Claus got himself a bonus. Natalia Silva does not get a bonus. I would have given her one just in general. She didn't even have to fight. She could have just stood in the octagon for 50 seconds and I would have given her a bonus because she's just a joy to watch inside that octagon. But to go back to the main event, Jed, NAK, we'll obviously talk about this tomorrow on to the next one. All week, Jed, Mackenzie Dern had been saying, I'm going to call it Rose Namajunas after this fight. She goes in there, has that performance, and she calls out Rose Namajunas, says, I have not been able to fight an ex-champion during this run. I think I now deserve the opportunity to do so. And we don't know what the hell's going on with Rose Namajunas at this point, but is this the right name to call out if you're Mackenzie Dern?
Love the call out. I mean, I think there weren't a lot of bad call outs for her in this situation, honestly, just because, and she sort of alluded to this, like most of the top 10 or 15 have sort of fought each other in a lot of ways. And she hasn't had an opportunity to really fight one of the top names. And this kind of would make sense. Like, I don't think there would have been a huge way to go wrong, but Rose Namajunas is probably the biggest risk, biggest reward, right? Like there's a world where Mackenzie Dern can win that fight. And if she does, then she's just getting a title shot if she beats Rose Namajunas. But there's also a world where she gets dummied aggressively because Rose is very, very good at fighting when she is trying to fight people, unlike when she stands across the cage from Carla Esparza. But so I have no issue with the call out. I think it's pretty good. If she had called out Carla Esparza, I think that would have been fine. She kind of alluded to Yan Xiaonan. That's about the only one I think would be bad just because they just fought. But she gets Rose. I think that's okay. Jessica Andrade coming off the loss. That's not usually how the UFC does business, but I think anything's kind of fine. And I personally like the call out. I think she has a chance at getting it, which is always sort of the way I judge whether a call out is good or not. And I do think she has a shot at getting it. So it's not a bad call out by any stretch.
I also like the call out. I'm not sure if that's going to be the official match. We can pick up to think about that, but I think a performance, and then I think this is an A call out. AK, what say you?
I like the call out, and I'm actually really curious who you guys think would be favored if that fight were announced. I don't know, this week. Rose. Let's say this week. I asked how much.
-250 at least.
Wow, really? This version of Dern, this version of Dern.
I don't
Dern
know if it'll be that high.
Really, it was really impressive. I would certainly pick Rose to win. But I do wonder. People sit, put in the YouTubers. I'm not going to throw a poll, but call it out in the comments. What do you give me? Give me some opening odds. The YouTube people are smart. Give me some opening odds for Rose Namajunas versus Mackenzie Dern. Let's say it's a main event. Let's say it's a fight night main event, not at the Apex, somewhere on the road. Fight night main event, five rounds. Rose Namajunas, Mackenzie Dern. Give me some odds, people. Not necessarily who you would pick to win, just who you think would be favored. So but I like the call out. The only thing problem with the Rose call out these days is that, and we say this, I feel like we mention this on every show, we just don't know when she's going to compete again and if it's going to be at 115, because there has been a lot of talk about her trying her hand at 125, right? So it's always a good name to call out. I think it'd be a competitive fight with this version of Dern that we saw. If she keeps improving, you know, along this line, there's no reason she can't compete with the top five in the division. But yes, you maybe want to go with someone who's like more of a short bet to eventually fight. But most people are saying Rose favorite. Someone's saying -1200. It might be a bit much.
-1200. It's not true.
I think it's just a joke. Rose -250. Yeah, most people are in that range.
It's going to be -250.
I mean, 661. Rose -500.
No,
that'd be a bit high. Not. Not just tonight.
Maybe, and look, I'm not here. This was a good performance, but like, I mean this in the nicest way I can possibly say this. She was -150 against Angela Hill. The gulf between Rose Namajunas and Angela Hill is enormous, and she was only a -150 over Hill. Yes, this performance was good. I think Rose is still a comfortable favorite in this one.
Yeah. I was going to say like
-500 feels a touch high. Yeah, -500 feels high. A touch high. But if it wouldn't shock me if this was -3. I would bet -250, but if it was -3, I wouldn't be surprised.
If we're not getting Rose Andrade 3, then this is the exact fight I want for Rose Namajunas. This is the
Rose
one
Andrade 3 makes a ton of sense right now.
In any division, actually. It could be 15 or 25. It doesn't matter. I don't care. That's the fight to make.
That's not a bad one. Cool. Dern can get Carla Esparza. That feels like a fight that...
Carla's pregnant and about to have a kid, so that ain't happening.
Yeah, that's a long way. Yeah,
okay, well, then never mind. She can't do that.
She probably shouldn't do that, yeah.
There's a reason I'm not on to the next one, except
sometimes you are.
Emergency capacities.
Sometimes you are.
It's okay. So great win for Mackenzie Dern. She showed a lot. I think she didn't answer all questions, but she answered a lot of them, and she took a huge step up and got it done. And we were kind of looking for Edmund Shahbazyan to see if he would answer some of those questions. And I think he did. I think he definitely answered some questions. That first round could have got real hairy in that first round, but he was landing some good strikes. He actually had Anthony Hernandez in a pretty tight submission, it looked like, for a few seconds. But Anthony stole some momentum. Shahbazyan kind of got just run over after that. But it's just a really bad – it turned out to be a pretty bad stylistic matchup for Edmund Shahbazyan, which a lot of us kind of thought it could be. But Edmund showed some improvements, Jed, did he not? Like, at least early on, going from, you know, where he trained from originally to going to Extreme Couture – There were at least improvements that we have seen be over the last, you know, since the losing streak and snapping it. And then this fight with a really tough out at 185 and Anthony Hernandez, I saw some improvements. Did you?
Yeah, definitely, man. Like I don't know that Edmund Shahbazyan's ever going to make a run at a title. He's still really young. You got to give him that, but I tweeted it out because I believe this with my whole chest. If you go from a not good coaching staff to a good one, it's probably going to do better for you in your career. He still came up with an L here, and he still showed some of his historical problems of being able to kind of sustain offense as fights go on, and a relative weakness to grappling. But what we were talking about on the Slack, like he showed really good defense when he was done. And that is always an impressive thing to me, because you could pretty reasonably assert that Edmund Shahbazyan was cooked halfway through that second round. Like, he didn't really have much to offer anymore. He was very tired. He may or may not have broken a rib. I know he told his corner that between second and third round. I've never broken a rib, but I can only imagine, based on people I know who have, that doing grappling with a broken rib and a man continually transitioning from top turtle to back control over and over again probably sucks all of the ass. So, but that didn't keep him down. Like, he continued to fight. He showed really good defense. He knew what he was doing. He was very keyed in on sort of the ways that Hernandez was trying to attack him with the modified guillotine choke, kind of the offside to it. And he would always get his hips down and sort of move out. He just didn't have the energy or the ability to separate, get back to his feet, and kind of restart some offensive sequences of his own. But that's still more than, frankly, we've seen when, like, Derek Brunson is just taking him down and beating his head in. So he's getting better, and he's young, and he still has opportunities to improve, but he's got a lot of flaws that he still needs to work out. And he's really got to find a way to stop signing bout agreements against people who can grapple, because that just seems like it's not doing him a benefit at this stage.
Yep. Most bettors on Twitter were like, I love the fact that people are jumping on Edmund Shahbazyan. They were just biding their time and waiting to just dump a whole bunch of money on Hernandez once it got to the right price. And it looked like as today went on, these good people price. Got that price, and they were good very price. Happy with how things
he got down
out.
To like so, minus 200. It was a good price. My gimmick.
He got under there. Yeah. He was, I think it was like we're doing the people's pre-fight show is like minus 190. Joaquin Buckley and Natalia Silva were the only two fighters that were minus 200 and above. Everybody else was in the high ones or below that. So good on you guys. Good on you guys. And AK, Fluffy Hernandez just quietly winning fights and doing so mm-hmm. impressively. It is fun mm-hmm. to watch this man fight. I don't know if I could, he is not a middleweight.
No.
I'm not putting him in that category at all, but four wins in a row, guy just continues to look better and better. He might not be fighting for the middleweight title next, but could he get a ranked guy next? Are we willing to go that high? You don't have to name a name, but what did you think of his performance, this run that he's on? And if you were the matchmaker, you don't have to give a specific name. What level? We going like 20 to 25? We going top 15? What are we thinking here?
I would like to put him against someone in the top 15. I have a feeling he's not going to quite get there. I'd have to think of the names. I know I don't have to name a name specifically, but probably to answer this question is better if I take a little gander at my middle rank rankings here. The highest you could go, I mean, Calvin Gastelum, depending on how you rank him. I think Jack Hermanson would be a great fight. Jack Hermanson's coming off a loss. Brendan Allen has a fight. Mr. Main Event, Caio Baralho, but I kept saying he deserves a top 15. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe they both deserve a top 15 guy, but there's no real top 15 opponent that's shaking loose right now. So then they kind of have to face each other for now. So that's a possibility. I already had Fluffy sort of in my top 20 of just my UFC rankings. And this went over Edmund, moves him up a little bit. But, you know, again, not and he's not a top 15 guy now. Just moves him up just a tier below. So if it were up to me, I'd like to dig out some of the top 15. I have a feeling it'll be another unranked guy, but he's so close. He's so close. I get the feeling that the UFC likes him. His fights are pretty exciting. He's a fight finisher. They love that. He has a distinct style, Mike. Like we said, he's not quite a middleweight, right? Where he gets into these fights where it's like this, just this muddy, murky, what do either of these guys do fights? Like this was a good fight. And again, I've been a little hard on Edmund. But he definitely, I agree. He improved. I didn't love the matchmaking. Not a terrible matchmaking at all. Not terrible matchmaking, but like like Jed said, I wish there was a middle ground between, you know, letting him show off his specialty, which is striking, which he got to in his last fight, and testing his grappling. Like, there must be an in between. Putting him up against a guy who's like such a specialized grappler. I mean, Anthony Hernandez does other stuff too, but he likes to get to the fight to the ground and just wear people down and beat them up. And we know that's Edmund's weakness. There has to be a middle ground between testing him and like exposing him. I don't know what that is. I don't envy the matchmaker's job when it comes to figuring out what to do with a talented 25-year-old guy like Edmund. while, you know, keeping him on the roster, and you know, you don't want to hand him easy wins and that. So it's tough. It's a tough situation. But yeah, I'd like to see Edmund get some sort of striker next, and for Anthony Hernandez, not quite top 15 yet.
Man, yeah, I don't know what his management team's thinking, putting him in a fight with Anthony Hernandez. I was gonna have to fight, like, he'll probably end up fighting like Ali Askab Kizriev, who's just gonna like belly to belly suplex him in the first 14 seconds of the fight. But yes, I'm with you. Hopefully, he gets himself a striker, and we can move on, and we'll just see what happens. But
honestly, there aren't a ton of strikers at middleweight, as I'm kind of looking over it right now, like.
Yeah, Chidi and Jokowani. I mentioned Armin Petrosian, like Bruno Silva. This is why you sign these guys. Like, this is why.
No, I don't like that.
But this is why you sign. Like, there's certain guys in middleweight that are like, oh, why does this guy exist? Like, he's just kind of like a middleweight striker. And it's like, yes, those are the guys. That's what Dulce Lungiambula. That's why guys like Dulce were on the roster to fight guys like Edmund. This wasn't like an atrocious matchup, but I would just like to see them let Edmund show off what he does best, which is what they did like his first three fights, right? And I guess they thought after those first three fights, you know, you knock out Brad Tavares, huge win, that you have to like place him in a certain tier, and that's when they kind of already pushed him in the top 15. And MMA is a tough one, man. Once you open up that, you know, once you open up the bottle, once you squeeze out the toothpaste, the contender toothpaste, there's no putting it back in. We saw that with Darren Till. Like, Darren Till is a good fighter, but once he fought Tyron Woodley, suddenly it's like, oh, well, he has to fight top 10 guys going forward now. And it's like, I wish we could rebuild people in MMA. We say this all the time. And so Edmund, there's so much time for him. I wish they'd give him some fights that just build up his confidence a little bit. Not that he should be ashamed of like Saturday's loss.
No, it's just a tough matchup. Anthony Hernandez is really good. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Lupi Godinez gets a nice win, wants to fight September 16th, which is, I believe, is Mexican Independence Day. From what I understand, there is no card going to happen in Mexico this year unless something just magical happens out of nowhere.
Well, but how would you want to do that in Mexico? You only have three Mexican champions and maybe a fourth coming on. Who the hell would want to go to Mexico?
Yeah, it's tough.
Certainly not a promotion trying. You mean it's tough because Mexico isn't offering them a king's ransom to come to fucking Utah? Sure.
That's part of it.
Garbage-ass promotion. It's just a garbage-ass promotion.
Come on, Bellator. Get down there. Make something happen. Joaquin Buckley, nice finish of Andre Fialho. We know someone was going down in that fight. But I got to talk about CDF, Jed Meshew. I got to talk about Carlos Diego Ferreira. Man has not fought in quite some time since the Matush Gamrot loss. That was in December of 2021. Hadn't won a fight since beating Anthony Pettis That was at UFC 246. That was before the pandemic. That was a month before the world shut down.
Yep.
He goes out and just runs over Anthony Pettis. And everyone thought this could be the dude. And then he wins his next, and then he just goes on and loses. And then he loses again. And then he loses again. And then he's got fights booked. And then they get canceled. And then another fight booked. And then he's injured. And then this happens. And then this happens. And finally gets in there with Michael Johnson. And we talk about middleweighty middleweights. This was Michael Johnson-y Michael Johnson fight, because Michael Johnson comes out and looks great in the first round. Quick hands. He's landing everything. Comes out in the second round, and it's the same thing. We're like, wow, Michael Johnson. He's been saying, I want to go on this title run. Maybe this is it. Maybe he's about to go on this title run. And then kablammy, Carlos Diego Fajeda just lands this overhand right from hell. And Michael Johnson goes down. I mean, he is out like a light as soon as this shot lands. CDF, being the nurturing gentleman that he is, goes over and cradles Michael Johnson. It was a terrifying knockout, Jed Meshew. But CDF is back, and he got himself a freaking KO of the Year nominee, did he not?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Probably will be it's going to at least make the, like, doc as you're putting it together. It's a hell of a knockout. I just in general assume that some other knockouts will mean more and thus rank higher. But this was the second best knockout of tonight and the best one if you're not counting boxing. So particularly coming from behind and coming off a big long streak of losses. I do want to defend CDF for just a moment, because look at the losses, right? Like, yes, he hasn't won in, like, there are kids in freaking preschool who can say real words since the last time this man won a fist fight. But his losses, Benny Dariush, heard of him? He's doing pretty well these days. Gregor Gillespie, who also just doesn't fight anymore, but was very good at the time. And then Matush Gamrot, also doing okay. So, like, those are very fine losses. Like, that's the best of the best at this weight class, the best division in the whole sport. So, coming back, getting a win over a arguably the sport's premier fighter who can pull defeat from the jaws of victory in Michael Johnson. I mean, it was a dope knockout. I don't have a lot to say on it. It's just like, it was really cool. Good for him. Let's try and fight more often now.
Yep. His five losses are the three you named. Another loss to Benny Dariush. At UFC 179.
Another guy that's not too bad too, huh?
Yeah, and then there's this guy who's about to fight for the BMF title. His name is Dustin Poirier. That was the other loss.
Doesn't suck.
In 2015. And then he went like 5-6 years without actually losing a fight.
I feel like if you're CDF, you got to look back on your career when it's all said and done, and you can draw a pretty clear line about where you were. Just be like, yeah, like, I know where I was in quality. I beat everybody who wasn't a top 15 dude. And maybe even like one or two top 15 dudes, but like, that's where I was. Wasn't ever the best guy, but I was unequivocally one of the 20 best guys. And that's a pretty cool thing, man. I'd take being one of the 20 best people in the world at something.
Jed, you are one of the 20 best people in the world.
Probably.
Oh, that's 100%.
I you didn't even say it's something. So that's just one of that statement is just one of the 20 best people in the world. Take it. I'll take it, Mike.
You're right up there, Jed. You're right up there. You're the Fast and Furious series of my heart. How about that? AK, what'd you think of CDS performance? Was there another performance that that's going to be a memorable one? When you talk about this card again on like Wednesday or Thursday or something, what's the first thing that's going to pop into your mind that's not Mackenzie Dern?
Listen, I want to praise Joaquin Buckley and Natalia Silva, both of them. Joaquin Buckley, I think we all agreed, Andre Fialho, great matchup choice for him because he's a guy who comes forward and swings, and we want Joaquin Buckley to have openings to add to his highlight reel. He certainly did. He got a quote unquote TKO. I mean, that to me was a knockout. I guess Fialho
TKO because Terry Hatley tried to get right? man killed.
I don't know. I guess because Fialho kind of like came back to life. They're like, oh, he was the referee, just saved, needed to save him. And it's like, no, I mean, yeah, he needed to save him earlier. So that was great. And then Taya Silva living up to her billing as like a minus 1 million favorite. So great for both of them. Joaquin Buckley, especially, new weight class, fantastic. Or back, actually, back to welterweight, which he fought up before he was in the UFC. But I also need to shout out Fialho and Victoria Leonardo, because I UFC, please, never cut these fighters. We need people. It sounds so insulting, but we need tough fighters, respectable fighters who lose in memorable ways. Jed, we've talked about this on these preview shows and post fight shows before. These are
they're like best ideas,
right? No, it's true. They're like professional wrestling jobbers. Okay, you need a guy or gal who you could the fighter that you're kind of not only favoring but kind of see star power in, so they can get their stuff off. Get all their stuff off. Get all their signature moves in. Just give the fans a real taste of like what makes them exciting and why they should be watching these people. If this is the first time you saw Joaquin Buckley, you saw the highlight reel before, you saw the Impakasanga Nainaka, and you're like locked in. You're like, oh, cool. Let me see how – that's a great highlight reel. Let me see if he pulls it off again tonight. Boom. Big head, super, super cool, well-timed head kick. You're in. You're a Joaquin Buckley fan for life. You're telling your friends, I got to see Joaquin Buckley again. Natalia Silva – I don't know what casual person is tuning into the second prelim of the night, but just bear with me here. Heavily hyped. I think she's, 26 years old. Everyone's saying she's going to just run through Victoria Leonardo. Guess what? She runs through Victoria Leonardo in very violent fashion. So, Leonardo is just too tough for her own good. She's always getting something, I think, broken or fractured when she loses. So in that sense, maybe we don't need to keep throwing in there, but... as much, like I said, I want to give the flowers to Buckley and Natalia Silva, but I also got to give praise to fighters like Fialho and Leonardo. You need fighters who lose in an interesting way. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. They're just as valuable, if not more so, than 500 fighters who occasionally, run off four straight decisions, uneventful decisions. Like, you need these fighters who lose fights. I don't know. Maybe I'm sadistic.
No, you're not. You need them. I call them the Jonathan Goulets of the world, because anyone here is old and watched like old UFC, Jonathan Goulet was like the platonic ideal of this, in that he was actually like could fight and thus had some skill, but he just had no chin. Like, he just simply could not take a punch, but he always also like dyed his hair colorfully. So he stood out in like a way that you could at least like remember him, and then he would get cartoonishly demolished whenever he lost. So he was like perfect for this. And we've got a few guys in the UFC, like Devin Clark. When he loses, it tends to be in funny ways. Like, we just need more people like that. Andre Fialho is really making a case to be one of those dudes, and that's great. It's a great role to serve in the organization.
Do not cut him. Please do not cut Andre Fialho.
Yeah.
I don't ask for much.
That's true.
Or Victoria Leonardo.
I'm not a doctor, and I don't know if this is actually true or not, but it looked like Natalia Silva broke her jaw, like broke Victoria's jaw. It was bad. I felt bad. That every photo punch of her, she landed. Yeah, that was bad. Nasty knockout.
That photo of Leonardo just like looking like she regrets every life choice that led her down this road is tough. It's a tough place to be.
That's how you fight as a minus 900 favorite. You go out there and you blow the doors off and you get a quick finish. So impressive stuff. Gilbert Urbina, good for him. Hasn't fought since the tough loss to Brian Battle in the finale, and comes out and just, I mean, he trucked Orion Cosi, just trucked him, and took 20% of his money in the process because Cosi missed weight. Karolina Kovalkiewicz, what a resurgence for Karolina.
Three straight wins. My best friend. She's streaking.
Three straight wins.
She is streaking.
Andre really Arlovsky-esque right here from Kovalkiewicz.
Maybe. Yeah.
We need more Andre Arlovskys in the game, too.
Thembo Garimbo.
His first UFC win.
First UFC win. What a story he is. Put over Colby Covington in his post-fight scrum, if you want to check that out. But Jed, before we go to the peeps, I want to leave it to you to discuss the one fight we have not discussed. Just the no-brainer of no-brainers in NBB community. Rodrigo Nascimento versus Alir Latifi. this had to have scratched you right where you itched, right? This is the just this is electric, right?
I don't even know. I had a great night betting, just outside of being successful. This was the easiest heavyweight over of my life. It was at -110. Over 2.5 was -110, which feels like a highway robbery. I had that turned on, and I wanted to watch the first minute to see if this would even be, like, somewhat sweaty. And almost immediately, I was like, well, I'm just going to go cook dinner now, and I'll come back to this in 15 minutes because there ain't no way this thing's not going the distance. It was magic. I loved every awful minute of this horrible fight. I know the rest of you didn't, and that's reasonable, but if you ever want to spice up a bad card like this, just bet heavyweight overs because it makes you enjoy the worst fights of the evening. And Mike, you know what? I'm looking at it right now. Of the 17 heavyweight fights in the UFC this year, 10 of them have hit their overs. This Incredible. Division's the best.
Heavyweights, this card wasn't high on the card, but heavyweights being put, you know, when they just randomly put like a heavyweight fight in like the co-main event and stuff like that, heavyweight fights being like guaranteed action or at the very least like we'll get a knockout out of it or something is like one of the biggest. I don't know why the UFC has pushed this myth for so long, because like for every like crazy,
they all have knockout power.
Oh, of course. For every, I'll tell you something, a lot of these heavyweights do not have knockout power apparently, but for every like crazy Chris Barnett like spin kick knockout, you get like, these days, you get like four or five of these. You have four or five, the Latifi, Nascimento, Carl Williams, no. Chase Sherman. Again, another law. I don't know how, we all know that, Jed, you took a hit recently with the Valentina loss. I feel like these heavyweight overs are just bringing you back single-handedly. Like they're some of them are just so obvious.
10 and 7 on the year. It's been great.
My God.
And almost all of the losses, I knew they're coming. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna do it on the principle, but Jailton Almeida is probably not gonna make it 7. It's right. It's just is what it is. But yeah, it was ridiculous. I don't know why we keep, like, would anybody really be upset if Rodrigo Nascimento and Ali Latifi never fought again? Like, would anyone be down other than those two gentlemen and their families? I don't think we needed this fight, but you know, it happened. It's a good smoke break fight. And I won. ChatGPT hit this week too, baby. Let's go. All the gimmicks. Man, and my gimmicks. Gimmick bet. My gimmick parlay. I gimmick parlayed.
This was the brothers. Wasn't the brothers one? The brother, they beat up. Well, they yes, beat up a guy exactly. who beat well, up or got beat up by brothers or something.
No. Orion Koski and Edmund Shabazian both have wins over a guy named Daniel McWilliams.
Oh,
who's
yes.
like, he's like Jay Silva or whatever. Like, he's like one of those.
Jay Ellis.
He's Jay Ellis, not Silva. Yeah, Jay Ellis. Like, he's like a 10 and 58 jobber or whatever. And I figured this out during the show where Orion beat him after his brother beat him. Like, a month later, he watched his brother nuke this dude in the first round and was like, I too should beat that gentleman with the 10-38 record. And so on principle, I was like, let's just bet against the two people who decided to put this man on their resume. Yeah.
Wait, he also
easy wins.
He also lost to the Shabazzian brothers.
No, yeah. Well, also lost to the Shabazzian brothers incredible. As well. So that's why this was like, I'm just going to fade the Shabazzian and Koski brothers. Easiest bet of my life. Felt so great.
You have to be the only person who had this parlay in the universe.
It was the dumbest parlay alive. Cashed without trouble. It was great.
God. I mean, this car was just full of interesting factoids on the regional scene. Because speaking of Jay Ellis, Nick Fiore, his first two pro wins are against Jay Ellis. First two.
Nick Fiore doesn't have a good resume if you look at it.
First 50-second submission, 90-second TKO. That's how Nick Fiore's career started, and both are against Jay Ellis, who at the time was 15-98. He is now 16-108.
I should have thrown Chase Hooper into the parlay and just parlaying those people and retired. Just retired from gambling with that. Because Chase was plus money and Urbina was like -110.
Awesome. JL's is right. I'm telling you, this is so fast. JL's Tabology page is one of the most fascinating reads ever. This dude fights like every month, sometimes twice a month. He's already fought twice this year. He's supposed to box in April. I don't know what happened, but this dude's going to fight like five more times this year at least. But just a very interesting retrospective on the old Tabology page.
The great Gerald Meerschaert has a victory over him.
That's true. JB Gerald, right?
He may have beat him earlier, but I know that Gerald does have a win over him. I don't know if Jay's beaten like four people or something like that.
I just want to give the final poll results of the how would you grade Mackenzie Dern's performance from Saturday. Listen, A 41%, A plus 33%. So 74% combined saying, you know, she had great for A or A plus. That's not bad. There's a few like C or lower. It's got to be just haters. I just kind of put that option just because, I don't know, just for the haters, I guess. So 7% haters, you've been spoken for. But almost 75% saying A or A plus. It was a great night for Mackenzie Dern.
He does have a win over Gerald Meerschaert, by the way. March 2007.
The first guy to beat him. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, just Gerald Meerschaert's second pro fight. He was 1-0.
Oh, okay.
He also has a win over Daniel Strauss. How about that? But I mean, this dude's fought everybody.
I just want to give Anthony Pettis
on the regional scene.
I want to talk to that man so badly.
I think
we should go to the peeps. We're now in JLS territory. That means it's time to go to the peeps, I think.
Yeah, let's go to the peeps. Let's go to the peeps.
We're in JLS territory. Let's go to the peeps.
If we don't, I'm about to turn this into a full-blown Fast X conversation. So
I've been holding back.
We'll take a few questions, and then we're going to get out of here.
We'll take all questions about Jason Momoa. So if you see any of those AK, make sure to flag them.
I will. Yeah, I'll send them to Kenny.
Jed, you probably watched this fight. I mean, I don't think anyone really watched this fight very closely, but would you say Aliyah Latifi was robbed? Because literally I needed about 90 seconds to realize that it was time to go walk my dog as that fight was playing out. I don't know. I don't think he was robbed.
He was not robbed. I don't. If you won, it didn't matter who won this fight. No one by the structures of the fight could call robbery on here. If you want to make a case for Aliyah Latifi winning it, like, I can accept it, I guess, but he wasn't going to win it. I was extremely, extremely certain that Nascimento was getting it because he just walked forward more and they both didn't do much and he walked forward more. And so that's going to win. And he landed the better shots. So Aliyah getting one takedown, might have gotten two. I guess he got two because he got one in the second and the third. But no, it's fine. Who cares is the real answer to this question.
I'm looking – just for context, I'm looking at MMA decisions. All but one media member scored it for Nascimento. And there is a 30-27 in there. Just one person scored it for Aliyah Latifi. Most people are on 29-28 for Nascimento. So
if they had scored that for Latifi, my reaction would have been, well, that's probably not great, but okay.
Yeah.
Moving on. Like it's just is what it is.
Casey, whatever you do, please do not pull up this question from Casey Carpenter. I refuse to answer it. It's on screen. Do not
pull up
Casey Carpenter. I see you. I will not answer this question. How dare you?
Casey Carpenter, I want to know what it is.
Now I have to know.
People on the YouTube can read it themselves. People in the pot who listen to this on podcast later, you're crap out of luck. All right. I don't even want to acknowledge the phrasing of this question.
Oh, yeah.
You're such a hater.
I don't even want to say. I want to explain this because people who listen to the podcast, I feel so bad because people who listen to the podcast be like, this whole segment is like, what the hell's going on? But there's a phrase used in the media and among fans now when describing a tough fighter. All right. We'll put it. Casey Carpenter is asking, AK, who has the most dog in them in the new Fast and Furious movie?
I mean, there's a very clear answer.
For anyone, okay, Jed, before you can answer this question in earnest in a moment. Not everyone saw this tweet. I tweeted, if you, I think I said specifically people in the media, if you use the phrase so-and-so has that dog in them, like without irony, I lose all respect for you at this point. It is so that, and I also hate, like, oh, he's him, she's her, like after a big like play or whatever. Like, God, we gotta expand our vocabulary. Okay, here.
Who's him in the Fast and Furious universe?
That's the exact same thing. You might as well ask this, or her in the Fast and Furious universe. But I'm so tired of this phrase. Please stop using it. Like, there has to be another way. I know it's just tiresome for us to say so-and-so's tough. They're tough. I get it. It's the same thing. It's just as tiresome, but it's like, it's just almost like it's trying a little too hard and I'm done with it. I cannot hear someone's ask, does so-and-so have that dog in them anymore? I can't. Or they do have that dog in them. It means nothing. It means nothing anymore.
That being said, Casey Carpenter, the answer is very clearly Han, as he came back from being dead. So he got that dog.
Yeah, he wins.
Inexplicably, by the way. Still not explained. Just for
the record. There are a couple more that are unexplained.
They will.
No one dies in this franchise. No one dies in the franchise except for, paradoxically, the actor who tragically passed away in real life, his character is still alive.
I don't want to go on a rant.
Come around anymore. Okay,
I promise I will not hijack this in terms. But they, are now three movies since Paul Walker actually died. It is getting so uncomfortable every time they try and mention and write off like why he's not there, why his character's not there.
Because they keep bringing back Jordana Brewster.
They still have barbecues. They still have parties. And it's like, okay, I get it. You can say like, well, we don't want him to come on the missions anymore. He's looking after the kids. There's no explanation why he's like, why can't him and the kids come to the parties?
Wife is there. Maybe he's just not.
And I'll say this. I got to give another spoiler. In the new movie, I'm sorry. In the new movie, there's a scene where this guy, like, Mia is being attacked inside the house. And then you see unseen assistance from off screen. You see like, one of the attackers gets taken off screen. And for a second, Jed, I thought they're going to be like, thanks, Brian. Thanks for taking care of like, oh, Brian's alive. He's just off camera fighting guys. You just don't see him anymore. I thought for a second, I was like, that's not what it turns out to be. But I thought for a second, like, oh, God, no, don't do this.
I might even respect it if they just went that far.
No.
It's insane that Jordana Brewster keeps showing up in these movies.
Well, you need,
because they could just leave her out. Like, if I was watching that movie and she just wasn't at the barbecue, I would not have been like, huh, where's your sister, Dom? I'm like, oh, that makes sense. She's off with the kids and Brian.
I have so many things to say insane. Right now. And I just, Casey, yeah, put up another question quickly. Put up another question, please.
Han has that dog in him.
Yeah, all right. All right.
Han came back to life.
I'll go.
All right. Is this...
What do you want me to say, bro? Is that grit and determination?
Sure. I love it. Sure. I get it. These are ways to say things.
There's not a lot of ways to say it, but let's just shuffle through them like every couple of decades. Gorilla Monsoon, you say he has that intestinal fortitude. Bring back intestinal fortitude. How about that?
He's got sand.
That's so good.
Very good.
I want to bring back that's sand. So he's got sand.
Yeah. He's just got
let's
sand.
Let's do that. All right, let's go. Let's
sand.
Let's go sand for the next few years. Then we'll go back to intestinal fortitude, and then maybe a decade from now we'll revisit the
AK,
dog.
Does John Cena have sand? AK.
Not in this movie. Not in this one. Not in 10. He's like super Disney character, nice guy. In this, it's such a strange movie.
That's just who John Cena is as a person. So it's fine.
Yeah, he's just being John Cena. Yeah, he's just being John Cena in this movie.
The only thing I've seen, like, I saw a couple trailers, and the one thing that I can't get out of my head is Vin Diesel punching Jason Momoa, and it just looks like his arms weigh 5,000 pounds. Like, he just can't get it over. And he's just punching, and each punch takes like 11 seconds to get to his face. And Jason Momoa just stands there smiling because they can't possibly have an effect on him because they're coming so slow at him.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only takeaway.
Dom is if you go back and watch one, the physical difference Vin Diesel over the 15 years, he was like, built and trim. And he he is just sleek wide. Now there's a reason he is never not wearing a tank top.
let's not shame anyone, but we will say they show a picture. For some reason they use a file photo of Vin Diesel from an older movie in this movie, like and I'm like, why would you do this? Why, like, he doesn't why even did, look like
why
the
did,
same guy.
Why did they do any of the things they did?
I don't know. Okay. Jed, we are going to do an emergency pod, I think, just for note. I don't even know where we're going to release it. I don't know what we're going to do with it, but I have so many thoughts.
I'll put it up under the dam. Damn, that movie ruled.
Let's do it.
Jason Momoa has so much fun.
It wasn't even an MMA fighter in this movie for us to, like, connect it. We were hoping, like, to have, because Francis was in the last one. No, Francis, nine. Gina Carano was in six. And Rhonda was in seven.
Jason Statham's probably trained MMA at some point.
I mean, he should count.
Has there been an actual MMA cage in an episode yet?
Shockingly, no.
That is honestly pretty surprising, but no.
They've been to space, but they haven't been in a cage yet.
They cooled off from MMA when their two MMA fighters were Gina. We know where Gina's at currently, and Rhonda, who's one of the worst actors I've ever seen. Look, not everyone can do it. I'm not saying I'd be a good actor either. She was abhorrent, and I think they may have decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Get burnt out MMA fighters, Jason Momoa. I know which directorial choice I'd be making if I'm trying to round out my cast.
I'm biting my tongue right now. I have so much to say.
Brie Larson, Oscar winner. Ronda Rousey.
There is
one of the worst actors of all time.
There are four Academy Award winning actresses in this movie.
I know.
Rita Moreno is in it as the grandmother we've never heard of. She suddenly shows up. She's an EGOT winner, guys. She's got Emmys. She's got Tonys, Oscars. She's in this movie. Charlize in like her third Fast Furious movie. We know she won Best Actress for Monster. Of course, people remember. Brie Larson, she won for Room. She's a Best Actress winner.
She's so bad in this movie.
Oh, Helen Mirren. The Queen shows up.
Helen Mirren?
Again, this is like her fourth Fast and Furious movie. So
Helen Mirren is Jason Statham's mom. Yeah, she came in like four movies ago. She's Jason Statham's mom in canon.
Wow.
But also is like friends with Dom for reasons.
No one in this movie who's supposed to be related to someone looks like each other. Okay, I'm sorry. Go.
No.
Casey, get a question, please. Get a question. Stop me.
I don't want to talk about the card anymore. I'm over it. Like,
Brie Larson and Scott Eastwood are siblings in this film.
No, he's not really related.
I thought he was Mr. Nobody's son.
No, they joked about it. This is getting way too granular.
I have no idea what's happening. I've seen the first one and a half of these films, and then that's it.
I'm sorry, Mike.
But this is probably more enjoyable, just like trying to figure out what the hell you're talking about than the actual movies would be for me.
I just know something about family. That's all I know.
I was thinking about it in the theaters. Always. I was like, if you went back to whatever year the first one came out, and you told anyone who watched that movie and were like, within 15 years, this franchise is going to go to space. No one would believe you. And yet, here we are.
We
successfully hijacked this conversation.
Yes. I just got a message on our Slack channel that we need to go to space. And by that means we need to get out of here. So you can go ahead and hit our space exploration music, Casey. AK and I will be back tomorrow morning to discuss this card a little bit further, and only this card, AK.
Okay.
And only this card. On to the next one, going down.
AK, tell me who needs to show up and who's the new actor that needs to make it to Fast 11?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
You know, they're always bringing in a new. I don't think he's going to do it.
Give me DiCaprio.
Chris Hemsworth, I think there's a real shot, though. I think we can get him.
His wife, Alena.
I know.
Alena Davis.
Okay. But she's one of two people that has ever died in the movie.
Daniel Day-Lewis come out of retirement for the Fast and Furious.
And that's I would spend $400 to watch that movie in theaters. DDL's the big bad. God.
Well, thank you for watching the UFC Vegas 73 post-fight show. And,
is that what this is about? I had no idea.
And also, our new segment, A Critical Eye, based on movie reviews from MMA fighting staffers AK Lee and Jed Vishu.
We thank you very much for joining us. Good night, everybody, and may all your cinematic dreams come true.
I'm so proud of us, AK. I love y'all.
What the hell are we doing?
They asked the questions. We're here for the people, Mike.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.